It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome back into Cougar Tracks here on KSL News Radio and KSLSports.com. Number 15 BYU hosts USF Saturday night at 8:15 p.m. You can listen to the game right here on KSL, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. It's the first meeting between the two programs in Provo, second matchup all time. And I'll admit, it's kind of hard to find many connections between BYU and USF, but my next guest is the only man who can say he's played for both programs, and now he has a son currently playing for Kalani Sitake's program. He's former BYU and USF wide receiver RJ Anderson. And RJ, welcome into the show. Excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll just jump right into it. This Saturday night, where do your allegiances stand, BYU or USF?
I have to say they stand with BYU for sure.
Yeah, and you were you at the game in 2019 when the two teams met?
I was. I tried to talk to Kalani and then Chad Lewis, but I was, regrettably to say, I was on the USF sideline to watch the game. And, it was bittersweet, to cheer on the Bulls as well as BYU, and was, glad for the outcome either way. It went the Bulls' way last year. But hoping for a different outcome this year.
It's pretty remarkable how things have changed for Kalani from that moment. They were 2-4, BYU was at that time, and since they're 19-3, it seems like Kalani's done a really great job with instilling that culture and players have bought in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's done an amazing job in turning that program into what it is and building it. And taking, legacies that have come before him with Lavelle and others, and instilling his own brand and culture, to get the right people in, the right recruits, to build that foundation. And he's done an amazing job with what the program is right now.
And you mentioned Lavelle. You played for Lavelle Edwards, and you're coming out of high school in Gainesville. I believe it was Buchholz High School. I hope I'm saying that right. Okay. I had a feeling I was going to say it wrong. It's like Hurricane in Utah. It's just like everyone would call it Hurricane. Yeah, there was probably
Hurricane. Yeah.
But did you always, when you were growing up, did you always dream of playing for BYU? Because you were growing up in Gainesville, backyard of the swamp in Florida, was BYU always a place that you wanted to be at?
Yeah, I mean, it was, in my top five. But, being in the backyard of the Gators and the heyday of the Seminoles, it was tough to turn down those opportunities. And originally kind of verbally committed to Florida State, but after taking, a recruiting visit out and meeting Lavelle and Norm Chow and, just seeing what they had going, I thought that was probably the best opportunity as a wide receiver for me. So, moved out to BYU and did not regret it. It was a great decision.
And I'm glad you brought up the schools that were recruiting you, because I feel like sometimes this maybe I would say new wave of BYU fans are a little bit younger. They don't realize maybe the magnitude of the type of recruits that they were going after back then. Like guys like you were getting interest from the Florida States. I think even Alabama and UCLA were recruiting you, if memory serves me right. You had national programs. And I just think that, people now look at BYU and think, they kind of know their place in recruiting. But I think with the Big 12 and everything that's happening with Kalani, he's going to ramp this thing up even higher with recruiting. And they're going to get back to where they're getting nationally high profile recruits like yourself from back in the day. I think that BYU is going to get back to more national recruiting. What would you say?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the Big 12 will help open that up. And I think the national exposure that they're getting, you know, across the board will definitely help a world, you know, nationwide, you know, where you're going to get those recruits from the South, from, you know, the East Coast, and looking at the program and the national exposure with Kalani, what he's building and want to play for him. And seeing the electricity that's at, you know, Lavelle Edwards Stadium and the fan base that, you know, that we sell out everywhere we go. It definitely, I think, will get a lot of national exposure and hopefully we'll bring that recruiting further out, you know, to here. And we try to push that in the South as well.
You play at BYU from 95 to 97. You were part of that 1996 team that's celebrating their 25th anniversary. They were honored last week. You know, what were some of your memories, or maybe just of your BYU career in general, but also that 96 team being a part of that?
Yeah, the 96 team was something special. You know, we were so close to beating Washington and having a chance to play in the Fiesta Bowl or maybe even the Sugar Bowl. You know, but the win against Utah, you know, Utah State, you know, Texas A&M and starting out in the classic, the Pigskin Classic. It was just a special year, you know, with the senior class we had, with tight ends, receivers, you know, Sarkisian, our defense was dominant. It was a team, you know, that I don't think that can be replaced, or matched, you know, thus far. And then the, you know, capstone of the entire thing of beating Kansas State, you know, in the last minute interception. It was just, you know, one of those Cinderella teams where everything just fell into place and was an awesome experience. I was glad to be a part of it.
I got to ask you, there's the myth with that Washington game, because you brought it up, that one loss. Were you guys really arguing about the what to wear? Because I remember you guys came out in the all whites. Was that a thing where you guys were like conflicted as to what to wear?
It's funny because McGuire called me last night and he said Ed Lamb brought that up and, you know, said we were arguing of socks and what color. And, it, you know, yeah, that did happen. What I was telling him is I remember on the bus ride to it, you know, a lot of the players, you know, were from California and Tupac had just died and it, you know, kids were crying on the bus. And, you know, I don't know if we attribute it to that or to the, you know, color of jerseys or socks that we were wearing, but, it, you know, that just the atmosphere of playing at Washington with that stadium was so loud and it was cold and it was rainy and, you know, just being there, it, you know, it was just not our day for one reason or another. You know, so I think Ed's trying to use that, you know, to make sure that they don't, become complacent or distracted with, you know, the uniforms and they take the task at hand of trying to beat USF.
You mentioned McGuire. We'll get to him momentarily here. Again, talk with RJ Anderson here on KSL News Radio and KSLSports.com.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
After the 97 season, I believe you made a move from BYU. What went into making that decision? And you know, you think back to those days, making a transfer move, it was probably a little bit trickier and more tougher to get exposure. Nowadays, you got the transfer portal. You can dive in and coaches instantly know you're in. What was that process like back then?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It was a little different. You know, there wasn't as much movement, you know, as it is now with the transfer portal. Making that decision was a lot tougher, and talked to Coach Reynolds and Coach Chow and, you know, was looking at what they were looking to do moving forward. They were, you know, trying to get some JUCO receivers, you know, and so I thought maybe the opportunity was to take a look at something elsewhere. So there wasn't a lot of people transferring at the time, so it was kind of new for me. So, you know, I decided I would transfer, and looking at, there was a Mississippi Valley, which was a feeder school for Florida State, a JUCO school. So I was thinking about going possibly there and then transferring my senior year into Florida State. And then heard about the program with USF, you know, and they just started in 96. They were up and coming. And then I took a look at their offensive coordinator, Mike Canales. He was a graduate assistant to BYU. So he took the exact terminology and offense from BYU and implemented at USF. And then reached out to Leroy Selman. He was, you know, an instrument in trying to get me over there and coach Jim Leavitt. And it just seemed to work out, you know, going back home to Florida to a new program that was just building, and don't have to learn a new offense. So it seemed like a perfect fit to make that move and finish up my last 2 years. And they were 1AA at the time, so I didn't lose a year of eligibility. Whereas now with the transfer portal, you know, it seems like it's real easy, you know, or easier for kids to, you know, make that decision. They're unhappy. They're just going to move. They don't lose out on any eligibility and put their name in there for all the other coaches to see.
That's really cool that that story. I didn't realize that with Canales, that he was the OC at that time with USF. And it's fascinating that their rise, because you think back to that 96 team that we were just talking about, that squad 25th anniversary this year. USF is celebrating their 25th anniversary as a program, still a young football program that's got still quite a bit of potential. And if memory serves me right, it started out of a trailer, Leroy Selman and then Jim Leavitt, and then they kind of rose to prominence a few years later. But those early years, you guys played some good football at the 1AA level.
Yeah, it was, you know, I go look at the program now, you know, really, really close with the program and trying to help support that. And the coaches, you know, with Jeff Scott, he came in and is doing a great job at, you know, they're complaining about the facilities and, you know, the indoor turf field and the weight room and the locker room, which is, you know, seems top notch. And we were, you know, in a trailer, you know, and we had dirt fields. Our weight room was a closet from the old basketball facilities, and just, you know, where we started out, where they've grown to now, you know, in the facilities that these, you know, programs have. I even look at BYU, you know, our indoor facility was the edge of the Smith Fieldhouse, and there was 35 yards of turf. Now they've got an amazing facility, and, you know, what the programs have done and the money that's into those now. So yeah, it's a remarkable turnaround. And you talk about the infancy of the program and where it's come in 25 years is you know, just a great accomplishment.
Yeah, that indoor practice facility situation, I always believe that was the biggest detriment for Lavelle's lack of bowl success. Like that, you guys didn't have that field to operate. If you had an IPF, you guys would have had a lot more bowl success, I bet.
For sure. Yeah, it was too cold to try to, you know, work outside, and, you know, with 35 yards, we didn't have a lot to work with. So yeah, I think we could have improved our bowl situation if we had a better indoor facility.
You guys definitely won that, that Cotton Bowl, which was amazing 25 years ago. It's cool to see that celebration for both USF and BYU this year on this anniversary, silver anniversary for both teams having that celebration. And, you know, it's interesting too, BYU and USF were in the thick of, you know, Big 12 conference realignment. BYU, of course, got the invite. USF, I think, was hoping they see their rivals UCF go. Were you hoping that USF was going to get an invite too to the Big 12 to see both BYU and USF in the same league?
Yeah, that would have been awesome to see both in there, you know, but just for the program as well. You know, they've been there where they're getting, you know, invites or discussions about, you know, getting into these big programs, but yet, you know, they've still, you know, stayed in the, you know, American Athletic Conference, you know, or these smaller programs. And so that's been the, you know, the piece of it, I think, is, you know, just trying to get, you know, the stadium on campus, you know, or more attendance to try to make USF a, you know, more intriguing program to invite into the conferences, these, you know, Big Five. But, you know, kudos to BYU and being able to, you know, get that worked out with, you know, the athletic director and the coaching staff. You know, it's exciting, and hopefully, you know, USF might have an opportunity down the road to get into there.
And when BYU is in the Big 12 Conference starting in 2023, your son is going to be playing on a Big 12 Conference program, a Power 5 team. McGuire joined the BYU program this year. What was the reason for him wanting to go to BYU? Was he, did he always grow up a BYU kid, or what other options did he pour over throughout his recruitment?
Yeah, he being in Florida, you know, loved the Gators. He was always, looking at that. BYU was always, a program that he would love to go to, just to be able to support the culture, that he's looking for and used to. USF was another one, maybe it was just because I played at USF and BYU, following dad's footsteps, and staying locally. And that was tough last year, with COVID, not being able to go on any recruiting visits, to really see the campus. He talked to Coach Kalani and, Coach said, we really want you to be in here. So, from then on, that point on, he really had his eyes focused his senior year on BYU and trying to get in there and was able to get a spot, bringing in as a walk-on. He was really appreciative of that opportunity and, was working hard every day, to try to earn a spot, down the road, for a scholarship potentially, or playing time. So he's working hard and sending me film every day. So I love to watch it.
That's great to hear. And how did BYU identify him? Did you reach out to BYU and maybe say, hey, Kalani, reach out to my son here. We were teammates. Like, hey, play that card a little bit, or did BYU do their due diligence and their homework and discover McGuire and reach out their way on their end?
Yeah, so I reached out to Aaron. So Aaron and I played together in '97, as well as Kalani and then Ed Lamb. So I reached out to the three of them and then stayed close connection with Chad Lewis as well, and kept sending them his huddle highlight films every week. You really got to take a look at him. He's a lot better than his old man is. So hopefully give him a shot. I know there's a lot of talent at BYU and with COVID, and the seniors getting another year, it was tough to find positions, but, we after he had a Florida Georgia game and did really well, I sent him those highlights and said, let's give him a shot. And so they stepped up the recruiting process and, unfortunately we couldn't go out to see him. They couldn't come to see him. So they had to rely, completely on film and huddle and, some begging on the part of his father. But glad that they had an opportunity and a spot for him to bring him in. And he's so happy to be there.
How was it for him? What was his reaction a couple months ago or last month rather when, Built Bar stepped in? I thought that was so cool when, Built Bar came in and announced that, they were going to cover tuition costs for all the walk-ons. Cause I know your son came in as a PWO. But to have that now covered, what was that like for McGuire and just your family in general to have that expense covered now?
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, for them to step up in that way with, the name, image and likeness and to provide that opportunity for McGuire and for all the kids, is just an awesome gesture and such a relief from a burden, of financial cost of that to help alleviate. There's still additional costs that come along with campus and living and food, but man, for Built Bar to be able to provide that money, was awesome for, the rest of his career there. And I am a Built Bar for life now. I went and bought a few boxes, and every couple of weeks I go buy those and that's the least that I could do as a gesture for supporting, our athletes there at BYU from a football perspective. So I'll continue to order, the Built Bars and help in any way I can to support them for all that they've done for these boys.
What's your favorite flavor? Mine's the Built Puff. So I'm kind of liking this grasshopper Built Puff. It's pretty good.
I got to try those. So my coconut and cookies and cream, but they just came out with a cookie dough and McGuire said, you got to try the birthday cake. So those are my next two.
Well, cool. That is so awesome. I'm excited for McGuire and his career because, with Kalani, he's got a track record and BYU history too. I mean, Lavelle, Bronco, Croton, they've all had success with turning walk-ons into players that make significant contributions. So I'm excited to see his career. And RJ, thanks for spending so much time with me and talking, going back in time and revisiting some things. So cool to catch up with you, and excited for your family and McGuire's success going forward. So appreciate the time today.
All right. Well, thank you. Anytime. We appreciate the support as well.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.